Good afternoon, everyone. We're delighted to have Dan Durn, CFO of Applied Materials, and Mike Sullivan, Vice President of Investor Relations, with us this afternoon. We have about 25 minutes. I'll try to keep it to about 20 minutes and then maybe have five minutes, open it up for questions. So maybe to begin things off, Dan, you had your Analyst Day recently, and a big theme on the Analyst Day was talking about AI. What do you think AI means for the semiconductor industry and for Applied specifically? And is it big enough today that it matters to you, or is it something that we will see like five, 10 years down the line?
So I think these are really, really exciting times. We see AI, big data, Internet of Things, autonomous driving, and I'll put an umbrella label over those, chip enablement of the physical infrastructure to get better asset utilization. The economic case around doing that is worth trillions of dollars. We see it as the fourth wave of demand for semiconductors. We went from departmental computing to personal computing to mobile devices and now to artificial intelligence. And each successive wave brought an order of magnitude larger number of devices. We're seeing a renaissance of architecture design again and innovation coming back into the industry. And we're seeing the early signs of this infrastructure build-out. We think semiconductors can grow at above GDP rates, and we think the semicap equipment space will grow in line with semiconductors. So we think this is an incredibly exciting time, a great trend that's going to serve this industry well for the next five, 10 years. We think it's going to be big.
Got it. Now, we have this opportunity on AI and all the chip enablement, and the economics are compelling there. But the other part of the other side of it is that Moore's Law has been going around in the industry for a very long time. And more recently, when we look at it, things seem to have slowed down. So how does that impact the ecosystem, and could we deliver the promise of what AI can bring to the world if Moore's Law is slowing down?
We think it's harder to scale devices on a 2D plane. We think that is becoming more challenging. Litho is an expensive way to go, and new solutions are taking a long time to implement. And so materials-based engineering, materials-based solutions are filling the gap. We see that manifest itself in the NAND market going vertical structures as opposed to just 2D structures. And then in DRAM and foundry, we see self-aligned dual patterning and quad patterning techniques that are allowing greater resolution and solving placement of features. And so capital intensity is increasing, and the combination of these things we think accrue significant benefits to us as people pursue new architectures, new way of building devices and structures to solve the problems that traditionally 2D scaling was able to solve. The price per bit is still coming down, but it's coming down at a different rate, and we think that accrues great benefits to us in the semicap equipment space.
Got it. Before you joined Applied, you were at a semi company, and you had a background in semiconductor industry. Can you talk about what are the challenges of running a semicap equipment company, and do you get more visibility, less visibility? Can you just compare and contrast a bit for us?
Yeah. Here are the differences that I would say. First, and this is one of the things that has me really, really excited about Applied Materials. We are the foundation of Moore's Law. We are at the epicenter of innovation, not only within the semiconductor industry, but in technology as a whole. When you think about Moore's Law, there's two sides of that equation. There's a power and performance side, and there's a cost-effective scaling side. At the core of driving that innovation into the market is Applied Materials. So at this company, I feel like we get to drive impact on an industrial scale, not just a segment of the market, lead in a segment, but we get to drive that impact on an industrial scale. And at a time when you're coming with what we believe is the next industrial revolution in the form of artificial intelligence and big data, it's just an amazing time to be at a really important company that I think is at the sweet spot of driving innovation in technology. The second thing I would say is the depth of our customer relationships is very different. The complexity of problems we solve as part of Applied Materials, looking out 4, 5, 6 years down the road and co-creating those roadmaps with our customers gets to a level of a depth of a relationship that's very differentiated. And I guess the last thing I would say is when we have equipment on factory floors, sometimes that equipment can be there for decades, which gives us an opportunity for aftermarket monetization of that install base through our services business. So it's a great complement to the equipment business. It drives great cash flow, and it's a more stable component of the financial performance of the company. And having that added dimension to the mix of what we do, I think is a fantastic thing about Applied.
Got it. Just looking at the near term, if I just focus on what has happened this year and what we are expecting for next year, if I think back a year ago, we were expecting this year to be about $37, $38 billion WFE year. We have come in much stronger. And a year ago, we had a view that the beginning of the 2017 looked very strong, 20% plus growth. Now we are a year later, we're kind of seeing very similar trends in a way, right? Like next year, the first quarter looks like 20% year-on-year growth. The full year, we are projecting like 7-8%. So maybe if you could talk about the expectation that you have for next year, if there's any changes to that view, and also if you could address you on the earnings call, you had raised the WFE for 2017-2018 from $90 billion to kind of like substantially over 90, like what drove that change, and just walk us through that.
Sure. So from 2010 to 2016, where you had a combination of PCs and the handset driving our end markets, wafer fab equipment spend was about $32 billion per year, and much less volatility than when it was just PCs alone. We see that now being structurally larger, so on average about $45 billion per year. At our analyst day, we said $90 billion combined for 2017 and 2018. And at the analyst day, when asked a question, I said, if I had to take the over or under of that $90 billion, I would have taken the over. So clearly at the analyst day, we saw more strength than was indicated in the $90 billion number. In the last 6 weeks, we see November and December being very good months for us at Applied. We see the end market demand drivers continuing to be strong. The actual ultimate configuration of equipment from our customers, we've got more visibility on that today than we've had historically at a similar stage. So it gives us confidence in turning the dial a little bit to several billion more than 90. And if you were to ask me today if I would take the over or under of that number, I would take the over. So we feel really good about the end markets, the additional levers of demand for silicon, how that's driving our end markets, and the increasing capital intensity, as well as the visibility we get with customers, is making us incrementally confident on those 2 years, as well as the fundamentals into 2019.
Got it. Can you talk about what end markets are a little bit stronger than what you were expecting, say, 3 months ago or 2 months ago?
Mm-hmm. So at the analyst day, again, we thought there was more than just 90, and so it's incremental data points that give us the confidence to turn the dial a little bit and be a bit more open. And again, we think over under, I think there's more likelihood of bias to the upside as opposed to the downside over those 2 years. If we take a look at 2017 and you divide the market in half, as you know, half of it's logic foundry, half of it's memory, with maybe a slight weighting towards memory. In logic foundry, 2/3 of it is foundry, 1/3 of it is logic. On the memory side, 2/3 is NAND, 1/3 is DRAM. And if I would look to strength into next year, I think both halves grow. On the logic foundry side, I think we see more strength in logic, but foundry strong. On the NAND side, I think we see more growth in NAND, but DRAM is strong. So as I look at that construct, we see a similar construct in 2018, and logic and NAND are going to be stronger drivers of growth.
Got it. Switching to China, there's a lot of talk of China investing, and there are multiple projects that are announced in China. What's your view on China, and when do we see billions and billions of dollars of CapEx coming from China?
So I guess where I would start with China is, the ambition is there, the strategic intent is there, the financial resources are there, but expectations are realistic. They understand that this is hard, and they understand that this is going to take time, and they're being very, very pragmatic about their approach to the market with a focus on the long term. As we look at the markets, at our Analyst Day, we said spend in 2018 was going to be about $1 billion-$1.5 billion more than 2017. And in our most recent earnings call, we've now upped that to $2 billion, so incrementally $500 million. As we look at the spend, we still see the largest portion of spend, the majority of spend coming from international players investing in China to produce silicon, and the domestic providers, the domestic suppliers, are still less than half. And in 2018, we see a heavier weighting towards memory than we saw in 2017. So ambition's there, being very realistic, taking a long-term approach, and it'll be a while before domestic producers in China can compete on the leading edge, whether it's in memory or foundry.
Got it. And then, you guys have a very clear message that we are going from lithography scaling to materials-enabled scaling. Can you talk about what are the scaling challenges that you see currently? And if a lot of those challenges are really in materials, then do you think there is an opportunity for Applied to play a bigger role in the $40 billion materials market, in the semiconductor materials market?
Maybe I can help a little bit on that one. So I think, you know, for many years, Applied was known as a company that had really strong leadership products in the areas of making transistors faster and giving them lower power. And this other area that you're describing is that how do you drive Moore's Law from a cost perspective, right? The scaling or shrinking. And, you know, so for the long history of the industry, there were really two ways to drive cost. One, by shrinking with litho.
Yeah.
And number two was, those litho shrinks became more expensive, so every four, five, six nodes, you would also grow the wafer size.
Yeah.
So those two things, right? Lithographic shrinking and growing the wafer size, that's how you controlled cost. So, what's happened is the last wafer size transition was in 2000, and there was discussion of moving from 300-millimeter wafers to 450-millimeter wafers. That was supposed to have happened at 10 nanometers and at 7 nanometers. And we're sitting here today, and we're seeing that that never happened.
Yeah.
So that cost relief, you know, that's no longer here. That's no longer with us. The other thing that's getting harder is that shrinking things, which used to happen like clockwork every couple of years, it became more and more difficult. And the other thing that's happened is that sometimes we're getting to the level now, from physics constraints, where making things smaller doesn't make them better anymore. You know, the magic formula was shrinking things made them faster, lower power, and cheaper. Now, it's more expensive to shrink-
Yeah
In many cases. The power of the transistor, you start having electrons leak, and so the, you know, you end up with heat issues. And so what we're now needing to do is to find new material solutions to help us out. So, since you can't make the wafers larger, or people are choosing not to do that, what do you do? Instead of that, what you can do is you can choose to go vertical.
Yeah.
That's what we've done in NAND. So in NAND, it was about 2D shrinks, and you'd get a whole bunch of bits. Now, the bits or the storage elements were too small. So now we're going back to big storage elements, and we're stacking them like skyscrapers. So that's how we're creating better memory cells in NAND and alleviating the cost problem. And what happens is, the lithography mix of spend has gone dramatically down in NAND, whereas the spend on things like CVD deposition, CMP polishing, the things that we do, has gone dramatically higher. So that's the NAND market, and that's one-third of the industry. In DRAM, we're still getting shrinks, but there isn't a vision to take that technology all the way down to using EUV, which is the next generation lithography, at least not widespread belief. So really, there's two-thirds of the market that's kind of not going down that path. The last area, which is logic foundry, the most advanced state-of-the-art logic and foundry, that is an area where we hope that we can help work with EUV technology on the lithography front and our materials to help drive that forward. The big challenge is, and you'll see this in the technical reports, the challenge is no longer shrinking things. The challenge is getting the critical layers in one layer to align correctly with the layer above. And if you can't do that, you end up with something called an edge placement error. And that can give you performance problems, reliability problems. It can give you yield failures. And so what we're doing is we're working with the industry, with our customers, on some new techniques where we're using new materials and new materials removal technologies, new planarization steps, so that we can self-align those two layers and enable EUV to come in and help. So as you're seeing, we're going from a world that was all about relatively simple shrinks and big wafer size increases to a whole bunch of new materials that we need to do. And that's been growing our business. To put some math to that, we used to compete for 53% of semi equipment total spend going back into 2012. We're now competing for 63%-64% of the total spend. And we see our markets in this shrinking area continuing to go up.
Got it. 15% of your business is display. And if I think about that market, half of it is TVs and half of it is phones, which is mostly OLED now. Can you talk about the display portion of the business and whether both of those markets grow within the overall display, or do you think mostly the growth comes from OLED? What's your view on that market?
So the display market is a business we're really excited about. As you know, it's the fastest growing part of our portfolio. We talked at the Analyst Day about our model against a flat WFE market. Our semi equipment business will grow at a compound rate of about 7%. Our services business will grow twice that at 15%. And display business, the fastest growing part of our portfolio, will grow three times that at 23% compound rate. So clearly, it's a business we're really excited about. We see strength on both the TV side as well as the mobile handset. In the TV side, we have a form factor change. And the analogy that I like to make is think about competition with 200-millimeter wafers. If you didn't make the investment to jump to 300-millimeter wafers, you didn't have a cost structure that allowed you to compete effectively in the market. And increasingly, you saw the separation of those participants. And we can draw a very strong analogy to what we see in display. There is a form factor transition that people will need, customers will need to pursue in order to be cost competitive in the future. So we see 13 Gen 10.5 factories and prior generation 8.5, Gen 8.5 factory, you could do six 55-inch TVs on a single substrate. At the 10.5 factory, you can do six 75-inch TVs or eight 65-inch TVs on a single substrate. And these substrates are like the size of a garage door. And so without making that transition, it's going to be hard for customers to compete. So we see strength in the build-out of those factories. On the handset side, equally exciting market. We see 24 factories being built right now. And by the time you get to 2020, you will have only penetrated 50% of the handset market. And then when you think about the curved screens and the chin and the forehead on the display for a mobile handset, when those get eliminated, that increases the surface area by 40%. And so think about losing 40% of your capacity as you implement that curved screen and remove the chin and forehead, and you're still only 50% penetrated. So we think the roadmap in the handset is going to be strong for years to come. And then when you introduce things like OLED TVs and foldable displays, we think the future roadmap of both of those markets look really attractive. And you can see why we're excited about that business.
Can you just briefly talk about the services business, the quality of that business? And you have talked about growing at 15%, which seems like a little bit higher than what your installed base is growing. So what is allowing you to grow your revenues at a higher rate than the installed base?
So the services business is a great growing business that's very cash flow generative for the company. And basically, it's monetization of our install base, aftermarket monetization of the install base. So you can grow those revenues one of three ways: increasing the install base, helping our customers manage the increasing complexity of the semiconductor world, and then the approach we take with the customers and the value that we add. We call it putting our tools under a service contract, so we can pull in ramp times and lift up yield curves. And when you capture, from a yield standpoint, a faster ramp and a faster entitlement yield, the economic uplift to customers is substantial, and it allows us to share in that uplift. So there's three primary drivers of growth. Gary, when he came into the company, our CEO, when he came into the company in 2012, saw the importance of this business, saw the importance of helping our customers manage complexity. We got a new strategy. We got a new leadership team focused on that business, and they've executed extremely well, and we're seeing the benefit of that now in our financials, and it's great to see.
Great. Now, talking just briefly about your gross margins and operating margin, you have laid out a target model which gives a path to about close to 30% operating margins. But if I look at your historical gross margins, like 10 years ago, there were times when it was hitting almost 50%, and now it's a little bit below that, like 47%-48%. So why are we not getting higher gross margins, especially given the products that you're making are so much more critical than any time in the history of the company?
So I think there's a couple factors at play. First, we talked about 70 basis points per year of improvement in our gross margins at a constant mix. And if we were to take our mix today in 2017 and apply it in 2020, our target margin would be over 48%. So you would see that embedded growth. But because of the services business, we talked about growing 2x our semi business, and our display business growing 3x our semi business. Both of those business come with lower gross margins, and so it masks a bit of that embedded improvement that we're making in the core business. So we're making improvements across the board, but we've got a mix headwind that's beginning to mask a certain amount of it. And I would say back a decade ago, our services business as a proportion of our overall business and our display business as a proportion of our overall business was very different than it is today. And again, that mix issue is something to keep in mind. Now, opportunities for improvement. I'm never satisfied with where we are or where we're going. So we always look for opportunities to do better. And where there are opportunities, we're going to drive hard at capturing those opportunities and dropping that to the bottom line to drive more value for investors.
Any questions from the audience?
Here it is.
You talked about the transition of die size and how, you know, the initial thought of going from 300 to 450, you know, really never came to pass, or even on some of the other technologies when you look at DRAM and or the foundry and the logic, and those really haven't moved to the vertical shift the way that NAND has. Can you talk from your perspective why those different transitions really haven't occurred, and if there is a, like, from your perspective, how you think about saying, okay, given that this has not happened, you know, what do we really need to do to kind of create that next leg of innovation to replace what has not happened?
I can talk a little bit about it. Yeah, sure. So that's a great question because, you know, one of the things that people talk about is they think about this: well, what if what happened in NAND going from 2D to 3D, what if that could repeat itself in logic? You know, wouldn't that be a very helpful thing? And the answer is, of course, yeah, that's a great idea. And you already see the beginnings of that with things like the FinFET structure, where, you know, there's kind of a curve to it. So you're enveloping the transistor gate on three sides, and that's giving you better performance and better power control.
So what if you could do even more? And there are some initial signs that is taking place. If you look in academia, you'll see that people have ideas about how to do many more vertical structures. And even in commercial applications, we've seen recently a customer who hasn't divulged exactly what they're doing, but they talked about the layouts of their chips, and they talked about something called a contact over active gate, where something that was on the outside has now been put on the top, and that's enabled them to shrink greatly and, you know, pack the density of their transistors. And what they proved in a presentation that they did in March is that they were able to stay on the same bit cost reduction curve as they would have had with 450-millimeter wafers. So kind of amazing, right? So they found a workaround for that. And what can Applied Materials do with that? Well, we can do a lot to try to help when people want to do things like that, because if you're creating 3D vertical structures that have all unique electrical characteristics and you want these things to be aligned, it's going to require new materials. And we're the company that has the best ability to engineer a whole host of materials, whether it's to deposit them, modify them, etch them, inspect them with e-beam. We have all of those capabilities, and we even have a 300-millimeter fab in Sunnyvale where customers can run experiments. So we're really excited about the prospect of helping eventually even logic to go more and more in the 3D direction, if people can. Thank you.
Thank you.